Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raider fake the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Raider to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, it was Pack Day on Saturday. Spring football, baseball, track and field, and tennis, all in action. Also, the golf teams in action at the Sunbelt Championships this past week. The men are actually competing as we record this. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on, but going to start off today with our very special guest, one of our favorite people, the senior women's administrator at Arkansas State, sport administrator for, let's see, we were going through this before we started, tennis, track and field, volleyball, soccer, mental health. Keep going for me.
Sports medicine and strength and conditioning.
That angelic voice that you hear is Amy Holt. How you doing, Amy?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good. And I told you when I texted you last night, I said, look, we've been waiting for a time to get you in. This is a good week to do it because I want people to hear about your role at Arkansas State, but also your story. And it's a very interesting one, just your journey here at Arkansas State. It's been 11 years now.
It'll be 11 years this July.
Yep. You've seen a lot over this span.
I've experienced a lot, learned a lot. Been a part of just a little bit of everything in the athletic department.
America's interim is what I've got. She's been the interim 10 things somewhere along the way, including AD for a minute.
For a minute, yep.
Well, that's what happens in your role, but you've kind of taken it to a new extreme. And in your case, that interim role, especially in tennis, has been put on you a lot because, look, we've had five head coaches in tennis the last 5 years? I think we were talking about that with Rebecca Brody.
Yeah.
And so five head coaches in 5 years.
Unless she's counting Amy.
Yeah. Yeah, she had to be counting me. And you can add it probably because I was in there twice.
I guess we can start there because that's your background. You were a head tennis coach at the University of Kansas for a long time, from 2003 to 2013. Mm-hmm. You were an assistant coach for him before that. But did you ever think that you would go to the administration side of things?
I mean, I didn't know I wanted to go into coaching until my college coach really pushed me in that direction and really told me, you know, you have a niche for this and I really would love for you to eventually someday take my position here at Murray State. Once I graduated at Murray, I went off to Eastern Kentucky and got my master's and was an assistant coach for both men and women for the Colonels and enjoyed my 2 years. And I knew this is what I wanted to do. I had a background in education. I thought I was going to follow in my mom's footsteps and get into teaching, but that didn't happen. And for 6 months after I finished my GA position, I did go back home and taught for a brief stint and then worked with a group of top tennis players at a club in Evansville, Indiana. But I knew this is not what I wanted to do. I was applying for other coaching positions, got several different smaller school offers, but it just didn't feel right. And then Kansas came along and offered me their assistant position there. Went out there with my dad. We drove all the way from Henderson, Kentucky to Lawrence, Kansas. And my dad was like, you sure you want to go all the way out to Kansas? Is this what you really want to do? So we were talking the 7 hours drive out there. My dad's background of playing basketball and being from Kentucky and Kentucky, Kansas basketball is, you know, kind of a rival there.
Yeah.
And so anyways, we got to Lawrence, loved it. We went to a basketball game. My dad had a newfound favorite team in the Jayhawks, and
wait a minute. Now, your dad played for Kentucky.
He played,
for
Adolph Rupp for 2 seasons and then got out and went into the Marine Corps. And he was in the Vietnam era. My dad is a diehard athletic very structured, loved every sport possible. He was a four-sport letterman in high school, and I was his little tomboy, you know. And so, you know, he had to make sure that when I went out to Kansas, he was going to be out there and help me find my way, and whether it's an apartment or finding how I'm going to drive to work or how I'm going to, what way I'm going to go. And so we had, I mean, it was a great experience doing that with my dad. That year was, probably one of the most amazing. We made it to the Sweet 16 that year of the NCAAs. And we had two All-American players that one just was, she was from Australia. I think she made it to the round of 16, which is very hard to do. Here we are. We're not a big powerhouse tennis school like they are at Stanford, Georgia, Florida. Love this team. Love the coach I was working for. A couple of weeks later, after we got back, Roland Thornquist, which is now the head coach at the University of Florida, came to me and said, hey, I got offered to go to North Carolina. I got the head job at North Carolina. And he said, I'm going to get out there, get the lay of the land out there, and I'll be in touch. As soon as he gets out there, he calls me and he says, hey, do you want to come out to be my assistant out at North Carolina? And I only had been there maybe 8 months now. So I'm like, well, let me think about it. And I have family that live in right outside of Raleigh, North Carolina. So it would have been an easy transition for me to go there. I thought about it. Kansas administration came back and said, we really want you to stay. We think we have a really good new head coach coming in. I knew I wasn't ready for a head coaching position yet. But I'm like, okay, well, the head coach that they brought in was one of our player's sister, and so, which I knew, and I was like, oh, excited. So I called Roland back, which Roland's position at North Carolina was only 8 to 10 month position. It really wasn't a full-time position yet. I mean, I was already full-time at Kansas, but they were going to kind of give me a little perk if I stayed. And so, which wasn't much back then, you know, I was making probably $15,000 as a full-time assistant at Kansas. So I'm thinking, you know, when we have some of these assistants coming in asking, hey, you know, we need this. And I'm like going, I was making $15,000 and I was like on top of the world, you know, and they were going to bump me to 20. And I was just, oh my gosh, I'm like making money now. You know, I was so excited. Jenny Garrity was the new head coach, and she was really wanting me to stay on. Jenny and I, to this day, were the closest of friends. I'm very close to Roland, still stay in touch with him. As that continued, we made a good run. Jenny and her husband decided that now they were going to let her husband pursue his career in coaching. So now they moved to North Carolina. Still, I'm like going, okay, I did put my name in the hat just because I wanted to get the experience of interviewing, you know, for a head coaching job. Still not sure if I was ready or not, which, I mean, I know I was, but, you know, I was doubting myself, you know, and like, I don't know if I'm good enough yet. So anyways, end up hiring another head coach, which I knew her. She came in. She wanted me to stay. So I stayed on. Her name was Kilmeny Waterman. Stayed with her. She stayed for 2 years. And then I was like, this is going to be my job now. They have to tell me that they're not going to keep me on. This is my job to get. And so I went straight into the athletic director's office right when Kilmeny left. And I said, tell me why I don't deserve this head coaching job. He kind of looked at me and he's like, well, Amy, it's yours. You got it. It's your job. I was actually on my way down to your office.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To see if this is the direction you wanted to go. And so I was like on top of the world. You know, I've got my dream job. I'm a head coach now. I am just all in.
Had a good run there. 10 years?
Had a pretty good run. I mean, at the time, we had kind of gone through transition with different ADs. I think I had 5 while I was there. And so tennis was being just kind of put back on the back burner a little bit. Facilities all across the Big 12 top-notch facilities across the board now, and we were still way behind with our facility. And so I'd keep going in and saying, what can we do? We're working out of a club down the street. Everybody else has gotten video scoreboards. We've got their own facilities on campus. Ours is off campus. I just feel like I wasn't being heard at the time, and we were getting over-recruited. I was recruiting against North Carolina. I was recruiting against Florida. I was recruiting against Alabama. I was all the top tennis schools. I couldn't, everybody loved getting here on campus, but when we took it to the tennis facility, it was,
Well, you're dealing with a lot of people during this time.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the five ADs, and you're making a lot of relationships. 2013 comes along, and one guy that I guess you got to know and got on his good side over the years was somebody named Terry Mahajer.
Yep.
And I guess he calls you in 2013. So how does he get you to come to Arkansas State?
So I actually call him, being kind of persistent. And I'm like, Terry, I just my struggles here. I don't think they're going to do anything while I'm still the head coach. And I said, I've talked to you before you left about want to pursue administration. I didn't think it was going to be that soon, but I need your advice. What could be my next step? And he said, well, funny you call me today. I'm writing out a job description. What do you want me to write down? And I'm like, huh? And so anyways, we got to talk, and he said, well, I have this position open, and I really would like for you to apply for it. So I applied for it, and this was right at the end of our conference season. We had just gotten back. We beat Iowa State first round of the conference tournament, and I think we got beat that year. We got beat by Oklahoma State. And I came home. I went out recruiting, and then I came back, and I'm like, yeah, I just am not feeling it. And so that's when I called him. And so then I applied. Like I said, that was the end of May, and I had a start date at Arkansas State at July 1.
And it was interesting, not even then, but even to now, like I remember there weren't a lot of places that probably just had somebody that SWA was their title. It was always something that, even here historically, you think back to a lot of A-State people know that's a title Gina Bowman had. She was a sports information director /SWA. Mm-hmm. So what was that initial job description like that he wrote with you in mind?
Well, at the time, I oversaw all 16 budgets. I oversaw the distribution from the NCAA and from the conference office. So I was more kind of had a feel of the meat of the athletic department. I still oversaw sports medicine. I did have women's basketball at the time. We all just kind of worked together. Everybody just kind of helped out when everybody needed it. I mean, we did have a business manager, Karen Barker, at the time. She kind of ran a lot of the everyday business operation stuff. But I enjoyed doing a lot of that and, answering to a lot of the coaches and, just handling a lot of the ins and outs of day-to-day operations.
One thing that I've always been impressed with is, as far as you're concerned and what you do is just the relationships you have with these coaches and just listening to your history and having that head coaching background, you know what these coaches are going through and some of the struggles that they deal with. But I know one thing that you do very often is send these coaches text. You try to encourage them and that's something that they need, and I know you feel is important as well.
Right. The one thing, I know when I was still coaching, to get a game day text was very, they're thinking about us, they're thinking about tennis today. And, and I want all the coaches, not just coaches that I, oversee, but Coach Jones, when Bilotto was here, Dez in basketball, track, I always try to send as many texts as I possibly can and wish them luck and tell them I'm thinking about you, you got this. Or if it was a tough match or a tough competition, you know, man, y'all really battled today. And a lot of times when I meet with coaching candidates or even recruits when I meet with, you know, I talk to them about being a coach, and I still wear my coaching hat daily because I still try to coach up the coaches. I tell them, your job is to coach and recruit. They're in their box. Let me think outside the box for you. Let me do the other things outside of what a coach's box is, whether it's answering parents, talking with a strength coach, or talking with a sports medicine trainer. Let me help facilitate that. You concentrate on your team, coaching, and recruiting. I would answer some of the calls that the parents would call in, and you know, and I've talked to them about certain things. But the one thing, and the coaches know this, the one thing, if a player comes to me or if a parent comes to me, I will not talk about lineup or playing time. That is one thing that is out of my box.
That's a good policy.
Mm-hmm. And the coaches know that because I put it out there on the table with them at the very beginning. I wouldn't want my administrator talking about lineup or playing time when I'm not around. I don't know what's going on in practice. I don't know what's in the conversation of with the teammates and stuff like that. But anything else, I will sit and I will open my door to.
One thing we skipped, because you mentioned like your dad was a basketball player at Kentucky, and that's, yeah, that's home. So that makes sense. But then you say he played four sports. So that was one of the four, tennis.
Yes.
Because I guess we got, like, how we got there.
So how I got to playing tennis, I started playing tennis when I was about six. I started playing competitive tennis probably when I was about eight. Well, my mom even played tennis too. So she didn't play like in high school, but she'd get out there and she'd play in her little women's league and stuff. And but anyway, so my dad and I played quite a bit. You know, he was so competitive, he did not want to lose at all. I mean, whether it was playing basketball in the driveway, playing tennis at the courts down the street. But I will tell you, he always said, the day you beat me is the day I'm hanging up my tennis racket. So he stopped playing when I was a freshman in high school. But he never picked up a racket again. But
man,
so
killed the spirit.
I know. He said, when the day you beat me is the day I'm going to. So he kept his word. He said, when it happens, I'm not going to pick it up again. And he didn't. But he was one of my biggest fans. And he always knew what my schedule was going to be. He always knew when I was playing competitive junior tennis, whether it was playing high school. Well, I made the high school team when I was a seventh grader. So I played all through from seventh grade all through high school on the high school tennis team. And we made it to state my seventh grade year, and we were runners up that year as a seventh grade.
Such a great game.
So I love it.
You can play tennis your entire life. And we had Sujay Lama in here on this podcast, and I know you oversaw the process of bringing him to Arkansas State, and he's already doing some great things. Just turned in the second conference win of the season. First time we've had multiple conference wins since 2011. So you got to go back 13 years for that. But you want to be coached up, encouraged. That's your guy. That may be the most positive person we've ever come across.
Now, Sujay and I go way back. We've been friends for over 20 years. Had some battles against each other when he was at Florida or whether he was at Illinois or at North Texas. We always found a way to kind of battle it out with him. And I will tell you, he's had the upper hand. You know, I haven't been able to beat him. So, but now I'm on the same team with him. And so it feels good.
What's the secret sauce there? Because, and I've seen part of the answer, but he could have come in, and if they were just absolutely terrible, nobody was going to say a word because he knew he was going to come in. He basically was coaching somebody else's team and just give him time to build his own. So kind of what makes it click that they were able, he's able to kind of take a roster he inherited and do things with them they had not done before?
Well, as y'all all have seen and heard, Sujay just has this affection and passion for tennis, for coaching. And he absolutely loves the game. And he will find every way to make you, Bobo, love the game of tennis. He can coach you. If you don't even know anything about tennis, he can coach you to where you know so much about it and that you think that you can get out there and play and beat everybody.
I want to see that. I want to see him coach Bobo up to play tennis.
That's fine.
Let's go. He would take anybody out there and, I mean, and make you feel like you are a champion. I mean, he has, from day one, he stepped in and he made those girls feel like that this is your time. And he got those seniors. I'm amazed. I mean, not that I'm amazed. I knew the talent that we had. And I knew what we had, we could make something special of it. But I want to tell you, he has just embraced it. And he's got the passion pulling out of those girls.
That's one of the things we love about you is, and we were talking about how you encourage the other coaches. He's just such an encourager as well. And I think that's one of the many reasons that people are drawn to people like you and him. I do want to bring up one other thing here, and it has to do with one of the roles that you mentioned you kind of help oversee, and that's mental health. Mm-hmm. And it's something that is part of the conversation, but I don't think it's at the forefront the way it needs to be. And one person that I know is extremely involved with trying to research mental health with his players and help his players deal with what they have to deal with in the classroom, on the field, is Coach Jones. He is extremely involved with that stuff. And pretty much every time we sit down to talk, he's going to bring up
Mental health.
And I know he cares tremendously about it. And so do our other coaches as well. But what are we doing from an administration side? Mm-hmm. What can we do to help our student athletes deal with everything they're trying to deal with on a daily basis?
Well, we have partnered up with St. Bernard's, as everybody knows that we're big partners with them. But even with the mental health side of it, we actually have a mental health specialist on site in our athletic department, which we're revamping that area, and we're wanting to make it more where if right now we have a male mental health specialist, if a female comes in and says, you know, I would feel more comfortable, you know, meeting with a female, we're able to have that resource with St. Bernard's because they are helping us place a person here in our athletic department. And they are allowing us to use their resources, whether it's a male or somebody of the same ethnic background. We're able to get the student athletes seen by who they need to see. As you know, athletics and athletes have a lot of anxiety. And so that is a big part today. I've had a lot of athletes come into my office and just ask to sit and talk. My door is always open. I've had several athletes just want to come in and say, hey, is it okay if I come in and talk to you? Especially, I mean, there's been certain sports that had a lot of changeover, and they would say, you've been the most consistent for me here. Can I come in and just talk? And the first thing I say, I am not a certified. I don't have any certification whatsoever. They were like, we just want to talk to you and kind of get a feel. You are a coach. You know what we're going through, and you can have a calming for us. We don't want to go to our coaches because we're with them every day. And, you know, it's not something that I want to bring this to my coach about. But I'm homesick, or, you know, I'm not feeling this about a professor. So I try to help them and talk them through just different little stages of coping. Had one come in, I get really anxious when we get on an airplane. Do you have any coping for me?
Yeah.
You know, and I just kind of, just little things to help them get through just little stages of life. What's next? Who am I supposed to talk to about my next step after I graduate? What do I need to do? You know, and so I kind of, you know, I help with those kind of anxiety. I don't help with big picture of mental health, but the pieces that I can help, whether it's coming, being a, just taking the coaching hat off and putting my mom's hat on, I'll do that and help with the everyday of, hey, homesickness, you're going to have it. I had it when I first moved to Jonesboro, Arkansas from Kansas, even at, 40-something, I had some homesickness. I get homesickness going home to go see my mom and my sisters. So little things, and some have come in and talked to me about the death of an uncle or a death of their best friend. And I talked to them how I coped with the death of my father. And, you know, and so little things, because I've experienced these things with them. Mm-hmm. And I can just put my experience and help with them out there. And they know that they can come and talk to me.
And it's important to be heard, though. And, mm-hmm. and you understand that the student athletes and the coaches, for that matter, need to be heard in various ways. But anyway, this has been cool to have you in. And I think you mentioned the mom side. Your son, Layton, he's in high school now. You're getting to watch him kind of grow up and get closer to college. And I know that that's another unique perspective that
you
have.
It is. He's a freshman, and seeing him get the chance to play the sport that he loves in baseball, watching him just warms my heart every time I get to, you know, get out to his baseball games or watch him play football. But just, you know, he's gotten to dress a few times for the varsity team at Valley View, and I've gotten the chance to actually see him play in a varsity game, and it's just, it's so exciting. And it was funny, not too long ago, he was asking, he knew my dad, he got to know my dad, but he said, Ma, he goes, how was Papa? Did he really like playing baseball? Because that was another sport he lettered in as baseball. And I said, yeah, buddy. I said, he was a pretty good baseball player. And he would go back, and he's talked to my mom a little bit. And my mom would always find his pictures of him when he played in his sports and stuff. And he loves to hear the stories about his Papa and all the sports he played. And how can, you know, he said, Mom, was he as competitive as you? I said, well, my dad was pretty competitive. He was probably more competitive than I was, but I can see that competitiveness in Layton, you know, that my dad had.
Amy, we really appreciate you coming by today. This has been fun.
Hey, I enjoy it. I love my job, and I love what I do. Heck, it's been in athletics now close to 30 years now, and, you know, I love what I do. I love the supporting of the student athletes, and I try to go to every event possible, whether I'm supposed to be there or whether I'm not, whether it's a donor event, whether it's an alumni event, whether it's going out to baseball, going out to track and field, going out to see all these wonderful student athletes compete at a high level, and then watching the coaches coach. That's exciting to me. I just don't watch the game. I watch the full picture.
That's Amy Holt joining us here on the Second to None podcast. More to come right after this.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program. Wolves up.
Back on the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. It was packed day this past Saturday.
It was that, yeah. Packed day.
Didn't rain on us. That was good.
Yeah, that is true. Now, I will tell you, the weather Still affected things.
A little colder than I think we anticipated.
Cooler, and the wind blew. And I do. I mean, I think it kept some people home. But I think the ones that went there and were prepared had a good time.
As for the spring football game, they had a scrimmage, 92 plays in the scrimmage, and the offense beat the defense 108-73 using their modified scoring system.
Stableford scoring system, yeah.
Of course, the day consisted of a lot of things that I know we heavily promoted, the youth football clinic. J.D. McKissick and Blake Groupie were out there. I know our fans were excited to see them.
Yep. Good. They were both excited to be here. It was I was happy with how happy those guys were just to be back around. And the camp was great. I saw people ordering from the food trucks. I never even got to go to one of the food trucks this time. But
you were busy then.
Yeah, I think so. And I tell you, the feedback I've gotten from a few different places coming out of that is that people really enjoyed, and I'm not surprised, like people enjoyed that. If you didn't know, Coach Jones literally would go into the stands and let somebody call a play at some point.
Yeah, he was excited about that.
People really enjoyed that. But also, I've been interested how many people have told me they enjoyed the times they stopped the game to run one-on-one drills. At different times, they stopped and went one-on-one D-backs versus wide receivers, or one-on-one offensive lineman versus defensive lineman. One-on-one, they did a quarterback challenge. They did a field goal challenge. People really liked that stuff because it was different. And so I've been happy to hear the number of people who've come up said they enjoyed, those new kind of twists to the game itself.
It makes it a little bit more unique. It's a different spin to put on just a scrimmage.
And I don't know if it's stuff where maybe the coach and staff, Coach Jones, decide, hey, we need to do something here because we're not able to kind of go with two full teams. Last year, in 2023, it was the most game-like spring game maybe ever at Arkansas State. In fact, they really busted that thing into two teams, and they played a game. But I don't think it's got to be that for fans to enjoy themselves. I think the people who really, really love football want to have a sense of kind of – they want to get a look at kind of what they think you're going to be like. But then to do the other things, I think people enjoy it. There were changes made that I hope stick around for pack days moving forward.
There were a lot of awards given out as well. And going back to last year, they gave some awards from the 2023 season. Mm-hmm. And one award that's been around a few years now is the Larry Lacewell Team MVP Award. And it went to Jacob Bear. And I'm wondering how many team MVPs across the country, how many of those awards have gone to centers before? But in this case, they did give the award, deservedly so, Jacob Bear.
Don't think anybody bat an eye about that. If they know about our football team, I think so. Okay, yep, that checks out.
And then the Withrow Award, which honors the outstanding offensive lineman, went to McKeelan Thomas, with Bear winning the Lacewell Award. I think it was good to give the Withrow Award to somebody else. And McKeelan Thomas is offensive lineman.
If you're going to say, hey, how many teams their MVP was their center? We say, well, how many teams their offensive lineman of the year was their backup center?
Well, yes, that is McKeelan. He was last year.
He made a start over there.
It was cool to see the other awards they gave out, and they gave a bunch of camp awards. But one that I wanted to mention was the Champions in the Community Award. And these are the guys that logged the most community service hours this past year. And it could be any two guys.
Yep.
But the two people that led the team in community service hours were Jalen Rayner and Justin Parks, two of your most important players on the team, two of the faces of the program. And to see that they're the ones out in the community the most on this team. And look, I know there's a lot of guys that are out there putting in those community service hours, and that's great. That's one of the great attributes of this team. And I think Coach Jones has set a culture in place that really promotes that. But the fact that Jalen and Justin Parks were the two guys I thought said a lot.
Well, we had to check into what sort of community service they're doing, though, because my 11-year-old came home the other day, and one of the school visits that the guys made last week was to VPA, where he goes, and he said Justin Parks dunked on him.
Hey, he's not going to let anybody win. He's competitive. We like that about Justin Parks. But I thought that was really cool.
I did too. I think it does speak to, you know, one of those kind of catchphrases in the term of the day with your culture and those sort of things. But when, you know, your key guys are the guys doing the most out in the community, that says you got a good thing going inside your facility.
We'll tell you what else was happening on Pack Day this past Saturday when we come back right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours. Welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Disappointing weekend for baseball. They were at home, dropping two and tying a game against Appalachian State. Friday night, App was able to win 20-7 despite the Red Wolves hitting four home runs, two of those from Nyan Hayes. I like Nyan Hayes a lot.
Uh-huh.
He started all three games over the weekend at second base, and hopefully he's able to stay in the lineup going forward, but I'm hoping it's not at second base.
That's right.
That's because I know there's a chance that Will French is back this coming weekend against Texas State. At least that's the hope for the baseball team. And, man, they've really missed him the last month or so. Lost 12-3 on Saturday. And then crazy game on Sunday. Lasted nearly 4 hours. Red Wolves put up 6 runs in the fifth to go up 8-3. App comes back. Red Wolves are still up 9-8 going to the bottom of the eighth. And a huge moment there because, look, this was an App State team that is one of the best offensive teams in the league. I think they proved that. And you knew one run was not going to be safe going into the ninth. And Alan Greer hits a 3-run home run in the bottom of the eighth to put us up 12-8. You're feeling a lot better at that point. But Appalachian State gets 3 straight hits to start the top of the ninth. They cut it to 12-9. Then, look, there's one out. There's a couple of runners on. Arlen Butts gets a huge strikeout of Banks Tolley, who I'll be glad not to see that guy anymore.
Leads the league in homers, right?
17 home runs. He hit 3 this weekend. 1 on Friday, 2 on Saturday. But you strike him out, and you're thinking, oh, it's going to happen. And then C.J. Boyd, who is also among the league leaders in home runs, he's got now 14 on the year. He hits a game-tying 3-run home run with 2 outs in the top of the ninth and ties it up at 12. Well, the game ends up going to extras, but because Appalachian State had to get out of there and catch a flight, there was a travel curfew. Uh-huh. And look, I've seen this a couple of times over the years when we were going to FIU and FAU, and we had to get out of town and catch a flight. It happened back in 2011. That was the only other tie that Tommy Raffo was a part of during his career. I know it happened when Coach Kessinger was here as well. But there was a curfew, and the game ends up in a 12-12 tie.
So everybody knows, like, you go into it. Number one, it's part of the reason the game was moved up to noon.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to do everything to stay out of that situation. But when you know on a Sunday and a team's got a flight, there is a set time that everybody knows that we cannot start an inning after fill in the blank, whatever that time, it's known. So it's no mystery. It's like nobody just comes and goes, oh, we're out of time. Once as it's kind of barreling down on you, everybody knows the situation. Oh, we're getting short on time here.
Yeah, and we were told the drop dead time. In fact, that's one of the things. We haven't seen it in so long. I didn't even ask about it. And we were told about 10 till 4 that 4 o'clock was the drop dead time. We knew once we started the 10th inning that that was it. That was the last inning we were going to play. And, you know, we had first and second, one out in the bottom of the ninth, or excuse me, the bottom of the 10th, and ended up grounding into a double play to end the game with the score tied at 12.
Grounded to a game tie ending double play.
That's right. Anyway, so the Red Wolves end up tying the game Sunday. They'll play four times this week. They'll be at UCA on Tuesday, 6 o'clock start time for that one. Then the scheduled game times this weekend at home against Texas State, Friday at 6, Saturday at 3, and Sunday at 11 a.m. And looking at the weather forecast, those times might be moved around a little bit.
Think so?
Yeah, it looks a little wet this weekend. Track and field.
If only there was turf, huh?
If only. Track and field hosting the inaugural Alumni Classic Friday and Saturday. Menachem Chen breaking the school and facility records in the men's discus. Selassie Sampram winning the women's discus. Michelle Ogbemudia wins the women's shot put. Bella Cassetti winning the women's pole vault. Kenyon Parker winning the men's high jump. The men win the 4x400 relay. Cash Kunkel wins the men's 1500. Trey South was the top collegian in the men's pole vault. Cheyenne Melvin wins the women's 1500. Colby Eddowes wins the men's long jump. Izzy Danes takes the women's javelin. Spencer Taylor wins the men's 200. And that's just the winners. So a really, really successful weekend for the track and field teams.
You don't say. But I do. Hey, the Alumni Classic, what's cool about that is that, you know, that's not just something they decided to call their home track meet. The reason it's called that is because they had dozens and dozens of track alumni come to town and help work the meet.
Yeah, that's really
and
cool.
And then they all had a reception, you know, at the football stadium Saturday night to cap off the weekend.
Really good weekend for track and field. They'll be at three different events coming up this weekend in Monroe, Nashville, and Des Moines. So spread out all over the place. Women's golf saw their season come to an end this past week at the Sunbelt Conference Championships. They finished fifth. They needed to be in the top four to get to match play, so they fell just short of that.
A stroke. That's how just short it was. One stroke out of fourth.
Ashley Kim and Morgan Ballou both finish in the top 10 as far as individual performers. And the team, how about this? They finished the season with the lowest team stroke average in program history.
How about this is right?
And they're so young.
That number probably needs set again. Lowest team stroke average round by round in the history of the program when you're coming off having the best player in the history of the program.
Yeah.
You know, you're not that far removed from that. And so to kind of come back and beat those numbers is a big deal. They shot the lowest 54-hole score they've ever shot in a conference tournament and finished a stroke out of the top four. So the stuff they're doing is really, really cool. MJ's done a great job there. And then, you know, the men, as you said, they're, as we record this, they're playing in the first round. In fact, I'll tell you, as we're sitting here recording this, they're, you know, on the back nine of the opening round, and they're tied for the lead. Same thing, trying to get to the top four to get in the match play.
Yeah, the men, the number three seed in that tournament, and it's the eighth consecutive year they've been a top four seed. And Thomas Schmidt, who's had a heck of a season, is the highest ranked individual in the Sun Belt going into that tournament. So a lot of good stuff with the golf programs. Tennis, we mentioned this with Amy Holt earlier. Closing the regular season with a 4-1 senior day victory over Southern Miss. That was great to see. And they're getting ready for the Sun Belt Championships, which begin Wednesday in Rome, Georgia. You mentioned last week that's the largest tennis facility in the country. Is that
right? I believe so. We're going to win in Rome.
Anything else we need to talk about here?
No. Hey, just appreciate everybody that came out Saturday. Like I said, the weather could have certainly been worse, but it absolutely could have been better, especially when we look at the weather we had in 2023 on Pack Day. Go back and look at the photos there, and everybody's in shorts and the sun's shining. So we'll immediately start looking at how do you make it bigger still. I was concerned about following up all the stuff we did on 2023 Pack Day and found a way to kind of maybe ramp it up a notch. So we'll already start thinking about where's the next place we can take this for 2025.
Appreciate Amy Holt coming in fantastic person. Enjoyed that visit and getting to hear a little bit of her story. Glad she was able to share that. Thanks again for everybody coming out to Pack Day. For Brad, I'm Matt. Have a great week, everybody.